What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our draft countdown series today. Tonight, we're going to talk about the cornerbacks, count them down 10 to 1. And here to do it with me is Coach Derek of All 22 Films. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's happy to be back. First of all, thank you for often inviting me during the season. Your listeners don't know, but you constantly invite me, and I don't make myself available as much as I should. So, you know, thank you for staying on top of that and being persistent. This is always fun. And so I hope your listeners enjoy it as much as I do.
Oh, my pleasure to have you for sure. And this is a great conversation. We've got a fantastic group for this countdown series this year. Just a fantastic group of analysts. And you fit right in. Really appreciate it, Coach. Let's start off with a little bit about the Ravens' current situation. And obviously, a complex one, but one where cornerback started out the weakest position on the entire team. In camp last year, everyone was concerned about the cornerback depth the Ravens had. They'd signed a couple of guys in Ronald Darby and Rock Ya-Seen, and Darby really worked out, and Ya-Seen really didn't. The Ravens kind of went through a miracle in 2023 in terms of their cornerback play being at a very high level, and their all of their yards per target numbers were fantastic. I ascribe a lot of it to McDonald's defense, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on the matter.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong there. Definitely a huge impact. I think that those guys were, you know, they ran so many different coverages and they were so efficient making the appropriate read in each coverage, and they were unpredictable. You could look at certain parts of the field and you could say, okay, this is probably cover three here, or this is probably some version of quarters, split field, whatever. Mm-hmm. But generally very unpredictable. And first of all, you know, those things have to be installed. The players have to be able to run them properly against 2x2, 3x1, whatever type formations. And the Ravens, it was like no matter who they plugged in, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ken, was it the Dolphins game where Marlon did not play, obviously, and I believe neither did Stevens. Am I wrong there?
I will look it up while you're going here. And
one of those games late, our corner situation going in was very questionable, and then we still figure out how to win the game by multiple touchdowns. So, yeah, McDonald, huge impact, and hopefully the players and coaches who do remain, which isn't much as far as the coaches go, have been able to take some of that and install it to whatever they want the defense to be. In this case, it's Zach Orr. Losing so many position coaches, I think, is is, I don't want to say equally as important as losing McDonald, but I think it's pretty damn important, losing so many guys with so much experience who proved to be successful when you put them together as a group. We definitely have some work to do there. And the cornerback position is somewhat similar to last year, like you said, leading into camp when Marlon got hurt and Brandon Stevens being the unknown at that time. A lot of questions and consternation from fans, myself included. Things certainly turned out great, even though Marlon Humphrey did not have, you know, much impact at all.
Yeah, not a good year for Marlon. By the way, in that Miami game, he played the first two series when Miami, I think, scored both times. It actually was looking fairly bleak there. I think the Ravens were down 14-7 at that point, but then they rolled on, of course, to a 56-point game and just destroyed the Dolphins in one of their big wins of the year.
Yeah.
You concerned at all about Marlon Humphrey coming off his injury being the starting left corner in this next season? Because I assume, you know, we certainly have to hope that it's Stevens at right corner and Marlon at left corner to start the season, assuming the Ravens don't draft anybody, they install immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you should be concerned. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Marlon Humphrey. Like, I love his attitude. I love the way he plays the game. I love the things that he does on the field. You know, hey, they're playing against the highest level of professional football players on the offensive side that you can play against. And then when you get in the playoffs, you're playing against the best of the best. So are there things that Marlon could do better at times? Sure. But all in all, man, I'm a huge Marlon Humphrey fan. Having said that, last year just wasn't healthy. And even when he came back and did play at times, he obviously was not completely healthy. You just explained the Dolphins game where he didn't even, I think he played 17 plays, something like that. If we could get a completely, if you could say to me right now, would you take a completely healthy Marlon Humphrey, completely healthy Brandon Stevens for every game we play next year versus the best corner in this draft, I would take the former. Because we know what we're going to get from the best version, healthy version, excuse me, of Marlon Humphrey and Brandon Stevens. And those other guys don't know what we're going to get necessarily at this point. But we don't know that we're going to get that from Marlon. That's the problem, unfortunately, is he hasn't been able to play a full season in a long time, right?
That's a very interesting proposition. I'm not sure I'd go the same way because that's a multi-year proposition. You're really trading a lot of future talent for...
Just talking about 2024.
Yeah, for 2024, you're trading that. All right. Well, anyway, let's move on. Slot corner, Kyle Hamilton, Arthur Mollett split the role. Good results after Ardarius Washington went down in week 2. Ardarius, just a terrific story coming out of camp because they tried everybody. They tried everybody at that slot corner role in camp until they finally allowed Ardarius to have a shot at it. And then he won it going away with a great preseason and had a sack in week 1, was looking off to a great start. And then he gets hurt in week 2 and lost for a significant portion of the season there. Did finally come back off IR DTR. But Hamilton, one of the big stories again, moving back to the slot, playing a lot of non-obvious passing downs, and then Mollett coming in when it was a fairly obvious passing down to play that slot. Some of it was 12 personnel, but it wasn't all that. There was some 11 snaps that Hamilton stayed in as the slot corner. And I love him in that role, and I want to make sure that they play him there as much as possible.
Yeah, he's nuclear as a nickel slot corner. He's damn good at everything else too. You know, if you looked at the flow chart, the job chart for what a safety has to do as a 2-high safety, middle of the field safety, nickel, pretty much Kyle Hamilton can do it all. And it's not only can he do it all, he can do it all at a really high level and quickly, you know, with suddenness. But as a nickel, he's devastating. Mallette's pretty good too, and Ardarius Washington, I thought was in line for having a really good season last year. I believe he played through week 2 against the Bengals, week but I might be wrong.
Hurt, yeah.
And I seem to remember some things he did well in both of those games. I think it was also week 2 where Darby started to impress me. They're just, again, referencing the coaching. They had to have been doing a lot of things at an extremely high level from film prep in drills and getting those guys ready for games. Cause everyone they put in there played almost to the highest level of their capability from a talent standpoint, obviously, except Rock is in.
Right. I would agree. And even Yassin Muniain wasn't terrible on a per target basis. For example, Darby was just outstanding. He was the fifth best cornerback with 300 plus targets in terms of yards per target for the season. That's rarefied air. And the other guys who are up there are all very recognizable top of the line corner names like Sauce Gardner and Jalen Johnson and players like that. So it's a very, very selective group. I thought the biggest surprise perhaps on the entire team the two big surprises to me on the Ravens list last year. The first was Tyler Linderbaum's improvement as a pass blocker was just monumental, critically important to the Ravens. Huge jump forward in that area. But on the defense, the guy for certain was Brandon Stevens and the big jump forward he made to be not only a starting corner, but an every single play corner. And he did sit out a game against Miami, as you mentioned, but basically played almost every other play the entire season and looked great doing it. I thought for three quarters of a season, slowed down a little bit towards the end.
Every snap, right? There was, if you go look at the week by week, like you said, he didn't play the Dolphins game. There was one game he played 89% of the snaps. I think there was one or two where he's like 99%. So maybe missed one play. You know, perhaps it was the last play of the game if we're up big, but everything else was 100% of the snaps. Insane, first of all. And second of all, I actually just finished a film study video on Stevens maybe 2 weeks ago. And what stuck to me in my mind was the different archetypes of receivers that he battled and against all of them was able to compete. And, yeah. And you know, you lose some snaps. Like, you know, Jamar Chase beats him on the back shoulder fade for a touchdown late in the home win, the second, you know, game of the sweep. He loses the 4th-and-2 to Kelsey on the first drive, I believe, in the AFC Championship game, the big play. You know, we did nothing. But we did no favors for our DBs in that game as far as dealing with Kelsey. Completely unprepared for the threat of even getting hands on Kelsey with outside linebackers or anyone. In my opinion, you know, the defensive staff deserved more criticism than they got for the first two or three possessions. But nonetheless, you can remember the plays when Stevens got beat. That means he had a damn good season, you know, and there's so much sticky coverage. Great if you way better than people give him credit for zone coverages, and some of our quarters split field stuff is a little hard to pick out at times. You're generally going to be talking about off alignment, 6, 7, 8 yards deep, pattern reading. I thought Stevens was good at that stuff as well. I didn't think that him and Geno Stone, when they were on the same side, were on the same page. That was the portion of the season where I thought, okay, those two aren't in line when we're in quarters. And it looked like to me Mike McDonald avoided calling those coverages where they have to pattern read together because those guys weren't on the same page always. But shocking how well he played. Did anyone predict it? Certainly not me. I would have thought a good season from Brandon Stevens would have been 70-75% of what we got. I don't know if that makes sense to you at all, but sure. I hope we get it again, right, in 2024 from him.
Yeah, I want to see Brandon Stevens actually recover to the first three quarters of the season. He gave up some significant plays down the stretch that were not, you know, not as good as he was early in the year. McDonald's defense just tremendous in terms of having somewhat limited cornerbacks, and I would put both Maulette and Darby in that category. And you could even say Kyle Hamilton's in that category when he gets to play with Stone and Williams behind him. But they're very protected in terms of how they were covered over the top. It wasn't obviously always too deep, but it usually started from a look like that.
And absolutely.
Something on a matchup basis often, as I think you alluded to earlier. Basically, they're playing two different coverages on either halves of the field. And I think I would agree with your comment about Stone and Stevens not being on the same page. Stevens did not travel, always was at right cornerback. You know, we have some guys we're going to talk about tonight who definitely were travelers, and that hurt their production. But with Stone, we did see, particularly when Williams was healthy, that it was Williams playing that deep half on the defensive right side, same side as
absolutely as far better. That, you know, far no disrespect. Hey, good for Geno Stone. I'm glad he got, you know, paid a lot of money and had an amazing story last year. But him on the right side with Stevens was one of the things that I remember being a little concerned about after seeing it multiple times, where I believe we're in a pattern read situation and the reaction from those two isn't lined up. They should be reading a particular guy and it doesn't line up. That did not seem to happen with Marcus Williams on the same side as Stevens. And to the point about Stevens as well, it took certain players to beat him. I was impressed with 1 week he guards George Pickens on the right. And I remember two back shoulder throws over there on the sideline, totally shut down. He had guarded Chase later on in the season. You know, obviously a different physical body type than Pickens, different downfield threat. Dealing with Zay Jones, the big receiver from Jacksonville, and Ridley, a BS hold down the field on Stevens on the left sideline, right sideline for the defense. I remember the different types of receivers he battled against, and it reminded me of like the high-level NBA defender who's like 6'6", that you say, I can put him on a point guard tonight, and tomorrow night I can put him on a power forward. I mean, Ken, you're a little bit older than me. the only guys I can remember for my Scottie Pippen, you know, okay. And that's a stretch to compare Brandon Stevens in, but I'm talking about being able to defend different types of players from one week to the next. And that was notable to me that because you normally aren't going to get that from a guy who can't repeat the same level of performance year after year. His performance last year looks like a guy who I think he's going to play the same way in 2024. I don't think it was a scheme thing for Brandon Stevens, you know, not that you said that, others have.
Yeah, he's not the one that I would say was the primary beneficiary of being an underneath guy. I think that was more Darby and yep. Millett who benefited from that. And even Hamilton, you know, being able to play the hulking underneath, rush whenever he wants, you know, reckless look downhill play that he would like to play. All that was very.
Ken, I don't even know if like it's going to sound crazy to say like Ken, Hamilton's film from college is what we saw last year. You know, when he was healthy and dominant, and I don't know that we're not going to get the same damn thing from him if the ball is directed to his side. You know, and when you line him up at nickel, you control because he's to the field, you know, 95% of the time you control the area of the field that the offense has available to them. And that's one thing that I think is really big with having two really good corners, one on the right, one on the left. They don't need to travel because we can put Hamilton to the field and kind of dissuade you from doing some of the things people want to do with slot or slot wide receivers or tight ends to the field. Anyway, I digress, man.
That's exactly why I love Hamilton in that spot, by the way, exactly what yep. you said here. When he says to the field, how I determine is that Hamilton is the most dominant horizontal defender in the game today. And the only guy who's been close in the last few years is Derwin James. And honestly, he wasn't as good as Hamilton was in 23. But typical alignment. In an 11 formation is going to have a tight end on your right side, typically, because most teams are right-handed and they scheme their runs around that. And then it's going to have the tight end split right and a wide receiver a wide receiver in the slot. And then another wide receiver to the right of that. So you have your three eligible receivers on that side of the field. All of your wide receiver screens and everything go to that side. If you do anything to the left side, is probably going to be a jet play or some kind of misdirection where you look to throw the ball out of an RPO or something to get it left yeah. after confusion. But you never really are trying to throw any kind of a single target left side, take a step back play.
Yep.
Hamilton dissuades all of that. And that's why he's so freaking dominant. I think honestly, at Notre Dame, he played a lot more on the back end, obviously.
Yep.
And his instincts were terrific, but I actually think it minimizes who he is as a player to have him back there. Ed Reed would be, you know, upset with that statement probably, but Hamilton's so much more impactful playing near the line of scrimmage.
100%. And the thing about Hamilton and how he was in perfect alignment with how the Ravens defense operated last year and even to a lesser extent 2022, because the sack numbers and the way the sacks were generated was similar, different coverages, somewhat similar looking platform from a snap to snap basis, but different blitzes, four man rushes, but different four guys rushing every time. Maybe not every time, but Hamilton does not get beat on the initial move. You run a 5 yard out, you don't beat him. You run a slant, you don't beat him. Where Hamilton has been beat generally is something that's, you know, I call it a China in or a China out. People call it a whip route or something that's a change of direction concept. You don't beat him on those things, those direct flow, one move routes. Do not beat Kyle Hamilton underneath, period. I haven't seen one, you know, in 2 years. And it puts the onus on the quarterback to understand the coverage, and then get rid of the ball quick. And if and you generally aren't don't have time for those change of direction moves that are at the second level, beautiful, you know, set up by you to say that, you know, how dominant he is as a second level defender. Hopefully we can do that with him this year, right? You know, we don't know how everything's going to be addressed. I wish we could have kept Darby because it would have been one less need going into this draft, in my opinion. A ready-made starter who apparently is egoless because, I mean, Darby, you never heard a word out of him last year, but he was balling his first four or five games. And then, you know, Marlon would come back and they'd start Marlon Humphrey. And I hate to say this because I'm a big Marlon Humphrey fan, but, you know, Darby absolutely outplayed him.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a good year for Marlon, that's for sure. And Darby had a terrific year. So I would agree on that count. Let's keep going here because we've got to get into the draft here. But I'll go quickly through a couple of the players that are still on the roster. JAD and Pepe, one of the really big disappointments this last year because they're in developmental seasons, have big setbacks with injuries, minimal playing time. It just goes to show you. I mean, I heard people watching JAD in camp and really thinking, boy, he's playing great. I mean, and it shows you really need live fire a lot of times to see just how a player finds the football, you know, deals with an opposing receiver, keeps his hands on that player and is able to track the football, is able to earn a turn, but out of that by keeping his hands on a player on a vertical route. He's just so bad still, and I don't really have any hope, and honestly I don't think he's got a spot on the team secure, even though they probably will try and give it one more go. I'd say the same thing for Pepe, unfortunately. You know, if you're not available to start the season, then the Ravens may look at other slot corners, and they could get a cheap one in this draft. I don't think they'll go high on a slot corner, but they might get a cheap one, and it might be somebody where they reset the clock again, since Pepe will be entering year three.
Yes, as far as like the camp stuff goes, 100% agreement. Because, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way towards people who haven't coached or been there at practices, you know, particularly the Ravens. You don't know what the drills are, you know. So, for example, it could be a drill that's, hey, you're either going to see a slant, a sluggo, or an out, and that could be the drill. And so we as fans may watch a drill and say, well, he's doing fantastic. Well, it's a limited outcome, and it might be, you know, they've set it up in a meeting room and saying, hey, we're going to work on this today. We're going to work on this coverage because this particular route is what threatens this coverage. So when Mike calls this, or this year when Zach Orr calls this, what he doesn't want you to get beat on is route number C, whatever that is. And so a drill that a person sees, a fan, myself included, we have no idea how it's been set up. So we don't know why a particular player is like, wow, he's breaking on that every time. And he's still not getting beat by the sluggo route. How is he able to do that? And then in the game, it doesn't translate, which is kind of what you're, you know, describing. Those things, you know, you see at every level, things don't translate because you've scripted the environment in practice. And hopefully the player has been able to adjust. But sometimes that added 10% speed of the starters or even the second stringers in a real regular season game is just too fast for certain guys. JAD and Pepe, you know, to be honest with you, I hope they play their best this year. They're going to need it, both of them. Pepe, to me, would seem to be in competition with Ardarius Washington, and you know, JAD in competition with whoever we draft. Me personally, you know, I would say whoever we're able to draft in the third or fourth round as a corner is going to give him a run for his money.
Yeah, that the. Let's talk about two additional players they acquired here. I agree with you on that comment, by the way. Kadar Holman, they got. He's by the way, will be entering his sixth NFL season. This will be his eighth franchise he's played for in 10 total stints, split among those eight teams. Very interesting background because he's a Toledo product coming out in the 2019 draft, and his measurables are almost indistinguishable from the current Toledo number one projected draft pick. Now, he was a hell of a player at Toledo when he was there, too. Never worked out for the Packers, obviously, and then got moved around the league like crazy. But if you look, the comp is scary in terms of size, in terms of length, in terms of 40 time, in terms of everything. They're very, very close. And Kadar Holman now comes to the Ravens at age 30. you know, looking to catch on and be a survivor in the NFL. They also still got Trayvon Mullen. They worked through, what was, I think, going to be an, was projected maybe to be an injury settlement, but then they end up signing him for another year. So that is interesting. Hopefully that's, it's Lamar's cousin. So that's maybe something that possibly played into that. But hopefully Trayvon Mullen is somebody who still has a little bit left in the tank and could compete for the roster spot. If not, maybe he's a practice squad guy. I think that's possible for Holman also. Holman is a guy I think could take JAD's spot, if he's going to be the fifth corner, say, on the team, or even the fourth. I think that's a possibility. I believe Holman has some guaranteed money too. So it makes
Can never have enough corners, right? Can never have enough. Those two guys, correct me if I'm wrong, they would be upper echelon as far as athletes for the tier of corner that they are. Holman and Mullen, they're pretty athletic, right? Yeah. I always find it interesting the guys that are able to hang on to a career, because obviously not everyone can, even though we'd like for them to. Some of them are the smart, high floor players, and some of them are what sounds like you're describing with Holman. I don't really know a whole lot about him. A guy who has more athleticism and potentially higher ceiling, I guess, if things can be put together. I hope we do stack up a whole bunch of corners, because we're going to need them at some point if Marlon's recent history holds, unfortunately, of not being able to play the whole season for various reasons. It seems like to me some of our guys, I would put Marlon in this category, are guys that have an injury and try to fight through it, try to play every 3 or 4 weeks and kind of exacerbate it or make it worse at times. And other guys would sit for 6, 8, 10 weeks. So kind of giving them a pass on that. But I think we're going corner once in this draft and maybe twice. I don't see how the depth here is really good. If you ask me, I'm not saying I don't think there's a Ahmad Gardner and Derek Stingley. Maybe there is, maybe Terrion Arnold and those guys, maybe they're better than I think. But I think there's a whole heck of a lot of guys in that second, third tier more than normal for whatever reason.
The position's definitely getting older as I see it. And it's a combination of factors. Obviously, the talented guys like Stevens is just aging into his second contract. And part of getting old, the way I discuss it, is getting expensive. And part of it is actually getting old and expecting decline sooner. He's both. I mean, you'd have to say, even though he's not that old. Humphrey is certainly getting very expensive at this point, and we have to hope he recovers a significant amount because contract is highly leveraged. But then the other problem is that your young players just fall flat on their face, and JAD and Pepe, and those are two guys you were hoping would develop and didn't, and you kind of have to start over. And that's where I have a real problem. And of course, Mallette is a signee. Ardarius Washington will be his fourth year in the league. It'll be only his third season in service time purposes. So they have him for another. But unfortunately, the team needs to get cheaper in this draft at corner in a lot of ways. They've got some cheap vets, but you pay market value for them, which is $1 million and change that first year. And then if they're good, they're going to want more money, as Darby did, for example.
It seems to me, I'm only going to be able to remember a couple of guys here, but it seems to me that there's players drafted in the second, third, fourth round every year that go to various teams across the league and have an impact as a DB. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying, the six interceptions, I'm certainly not. Everybody's not Tariq Woolen or Reek Woolen. But there's guys who come in and are ready to go at corner. And I feel like it's a larger swath of players recently. Maybe it's just my own naivete or lack of experience, because this is really only the third year I've looked at the draft from. And look, Ken, to be honest with you, I've really only looked at the corner group. Once you got in touch with me about it, I was like, all right, I'm just going to focus on corners, number one. Number two, it's fun to me because I get to watch the whole defense, and then I get to watch the receivers too. The way I did it was I went Big Ten first, and then I went SEC. And then miscellaneous, other conferences. So my own focus on corner was one that was I already have a preconceived notion that there's better corner play generally coming into the NFL than there was 10, 12 years ago, because there's more sound coverages being played. The quarters split field stuff mixed in with man, mixed in with zone stuff really puts a lot of onus on the quarterbacks to make decisions post snap. And that, You know, that's Mike McDonald's deal. Hopefully Zach Orr can carry some of that over. I think the draft sets us up good, man, with corner.
That really allows that defensive coordinator, too, to hide some weaknesses on the field. McDonald, I thought, was the master at it last year in terms of having some players who are a little bit limited and you know, getting great value out of them in the positions they had.
100%. That 17-game season, I don't think is a 17-game season. I think that it's an 18- or 19-game season. And what I mean by that is adding one game isn't just plus one to what you're adding for players and their bodies and what you're asking them to do. There is a point in time at which it's just too much football for one body to play in the span of a season, whatever that season is, 24 weeks, 22 weeks, you know, whatever. And I don't think the 17-game season has an impact like just one more game. And so from the standpoint of playing coverages that kind of account for using your second or third or in some case fourth best corner, I think that's just smart defensive planning. Whether Mike McDonald meant to do that, you know, or not, I don't know. But I felt like everybody they put in last year worked out. Is that going to happen in 2024? I don't know, man. I feel a little, again, naive saying that we're just going to throw everybody in there no matter who they are and they're going to play well.
Different defensive coordinator, we really will have to see. Zach Orr was here. He certainly embodies a lot of the principles that McDonald had. I think in particular with the committed nickel desire, I sense that coming across in spades. But I can only hope that he can adapt as quickly in game as McDonald did. It was absolutely terrific. And, you know, you mentioned the Kansas City game in particular. And yes, they did score on the first two drives and they got ahead and the situation looked pretty damn bleak at that moment in the AFC Championship game as well. And then they actually really did take control of that game away from Mahomes, I thought, the rest of the way and gave themselves a real chance.
100%. We don't turn the football over, and Kansas City doesn't have a brilliant defensive draft 2 years ago. They don't beat us as horribly as we played. Nonetheless, you know, from my limited experience as a coach, our preparation defensively was the worst that I had seen it in 2023. That was the worst, other than the Rams, who physically came in 11 personnel and beat our ass. Those two games would be the only situations I would and look, to be honest with you, I don't think Mike McDonald's defense is set up to defend the 11 to defend a coach committed to running the ball out of 11 personnel under center in the quarter split field looks that we show and that a lot of people play. I think it's beneficial to the defense to be able to see the quarterback. Well, when the quarterback's under center and you have a committed run game, I think that takes away some of our weapons defensively, maybe some of our reactions, makes us react a split second, a tenth of a second, maybe 2/10 of a second slower to certain things. That would be my only complaints. And Seahawks fans don't like me saying that, of course, because now he's in a division where they play the Rams twice and the 49ers twice.
Well, it certainly invites the run. And I thought it was an outstanding trade-off by McDonald that worked terrifically well in 2023 was to basically trade, you know, 4/10 of a yard per carry for a much larger gain in yards per pass play.
And yeah, it's meant to slow down guys like Burrow. It's meant to slow down offenses like that. You know, I don't say meant to. It's geared towards that, and it's not, you know, ignoring the other threats. But those would be the two games where I felt like our preparation and game plan coming in was very poor.
All right, let's get to the top 10 here, and you're the guest. Please start it off with your number 10 guy.
All right, give me a second. Let me switch my tab over. Sorry. I'm working on a video on the Maryland area guys that are in the draft. So I'm going to go Renardo Green, and I'll be honest with you. My gut tells me to rank him higher. I thought, just like everybody else, his performance against LSU last year was shocking. First route of the game, I think Thomas beats him. No help over the top, and Thomas does clearly beat him. Other than that, he was an ass kicker, and I thought he really got into neighbors a lot. Supercharged from an effort standpoint in man. I love the complaint against Renardo Green that's like, oh, he's going to draw more penalties in the NFL. Like his technique's not going to get better, and his teaching isn't going to get better and such, and he's not going to be able to adjust. So he's my number 10 guy. I'm not a huge fan of ranking players. I really would like to put him at 7 or 8.
we do this because people want that from us. Okay. And in a certain sense, I want to do it. I want to have an order for draft night and be able to say, well, my next guy on the board is Renardo Green.
I'll do it because you asked me to, but nobody else.
All right. Well, fair enough. I do appreciate it. And I've always found, like, regardless of what I do, people appreciate the grades and they want a simple way to convey what I've said, you know, and you too, I'm sure they want that out of you because people quote you all the time.
Renardo Green starts next year.
There you go. All right. So I've got a few things about Green. And in addition to watching the tape, I really wanted a consistent set of metrics on every player's. So not just the measurables from the combine, because I know you know that, and I can go over a little bit of that, but in terms of what their production was like in 2023. And the primary reason I did that was because I really hated the Ravens' 2022 fifth-round draft pick. And the reason I hated him was his college production did not match all of the talk about him. And if they just looked at the numbers, it's you know, it had been a no, frankly. And they did talk a little bit about how he'd had a bad year and they started making excuses for it. But I think that there's some evaluator bias and, frankly, some evaluator arrogance that dips into that. And I don't want to be a pure traits-based guy and just do that. I really need to match that up with good numbers on the thing. So anyway, I collected these numbers.
Agreed. You know, we all do it, but in some cases these guys do it. It's like, oh, I'm evaluating this guy and I really, really do want him to do well. So therefore, you know, he is better than everybody else thinks. No, absolutely in line with that. I think we have to look at grabbing a corner here, you know, sometime up to pick 113, someone who can contribute now, in the event that one of our guys can't play 1 week. And you know, I think Renardo Green's one of those guys.
All right, let me go through the metrics on Green here that I have. So 2023, there are 190 quarterbacks who played at least 120 coverage snaps at the college level. So I've got a ranking for these guys and whatnot. Renardo Green allowed 4.8 yards per target, which was outstanding, 5.7 snaps per target, which is 154th out of 190 quarterbacks. So he's being targeted a lot. 11.0 ADOT was 59th. Now, unless it's really extreme, I don't care because a lot of it is context dependent on how they're playing those coverages in terms of how deep they're throwing. You play way off, you play a lot of cover three, they're going to be throwing in front of you. Right. You allow yourself in press to be deep, they will try it against you a fair amount. And that ADOT is just of target. It's not of completion. So it's important. But anyway, he's in the middle in that. One interception, three touchdowns, 75% opposition passer rating, which was 62nd. So that's not his best characteristic, but it's not terrible either. What was good is he had 31 stops and 10 missed tackles. The 31, that was over a two-year period. I'm sorry. The 3.1-to-1 ratio, and this is this is my strikeout-to-walk ratio for inside linebackers, by the way, because there's a huge variation in players. You look at the top of the group and players like Edgerrin Cooper and the guy from NC State whose name is escaping me right now.
Peyton Wilson.
Peyton Wilson had over 11-to-1 stops divided by missed tackles for the year.
Right.
Yeah, like I think it was 67-to-6 was he for the year. And most of the other guys were in the, you know, the 5-to-1 was exceptional. I think the next highest guy was right around 6-to-1 after Peyton. So impressive in that regard. Anyway, this the missed tackles to stops at corner, I do expect a lower ratio because they don't get as many stops. But 3.1-to-1 is quite good, and definitely love Green for that. He was traveling this year, played some left corner and some right corner, definitely had some chase history in 2023. Very aggressive corner, likes to play man. It's very clear if you watch him. Not the ideal cornerback for cover three in my book. And I'd like to get your thoughts on that in just a second here. He's one of the guys in the draft that I don't think has the proven ability to read the quarterback and play cover three. Most of the other guys in this draft, I really like as cover three corners. I really like as looking at the quarterbacks, they have good instincts, and particularly the guys I chose in my top 10. But Green is one, I think he's untested in that regard. What do you think? How do you think of him?
These guys are all taught different things, first of all. Like, you know, some guys teach cover three to the corner. I'm not looking at the quarterback at all. Like, if I'm teaching a 16, 17-year-old kid, I better not be looking at the damn quarterback. Like, I better be reading the route, but it depends on, you know, what you're teaching. It depends on the situation. So like, I don't know that Florida State it seemed to me like Florida State, from the film I watched, was focused on really getting after people, you know, and it seemed like that was their mentality. And I don't know much about their defensive coordinator. You know, I don't pretend to. It didn't seem like they played a lot of straight zone. I thought I saw a lot of man and then some zone to one side with like a man call to the other. You know, I'm generalizing here. Like I don't look up the, you know, percentage of zone to man. I did a Renardo Green thing on Twitter like maybe a month ago, and someone commented like, I don't want a guy who can't play zone. I'm like you don't. So what you're saying is you don't think that your defensive coordinator or your DB coaches can teach him how to play zone.
That he can't play zone.
Yeah, I mean, so like I don't know. I mean, I don't know where I am with those things, because I don't pretend to know the position coaches at each college that well that I can say, oh, that guy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I know Manny Diaz does some controlled chaos shit at Penn State that I really love, but I don't think, he teaches defense the same way that a guy at Notre Dame does. So when you get to the pros and there's some alignment with what you're teaching the three DBs you already have to the new guy, then I feel like, for me at least, you know, my own limited understanding, I can make a judgment on, you know, this guy's better than that guy at this. It's difficult to do that, knowing that the Ravens teaching defensively last year was such a high level from the DB standpoint versus whatever some of these guys were being taught or coached in college. I would offer that a guy who's athletic enough for me to play man against Neighbors and Thomas, like I saw, is athletic enough for me to play in zone and, you know, the quarter stuff. Although I didn't see Florida State play much of the quarter split field stuff, and I certainly don't know how much Zach Orr's going to do it. I hope we retain it, you know, to give us that multiplicity.
Yeah, I do too. And obviously that will mean getting another safety at some point during the draft. I think that is one position where the Ravens have really been able to get players cheap. So I hope they continue with that philosophy, pick up somebody round five, round six. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at guys who really jumped in right away and played great corner at a deep round, and you were talking about that earlier, Will Demps was undrafted, immediately started at safety in 2002 for the Ravens. And Landry was a fifth-round pick who immediately installed as a starter next to Ed Reed and had five picks his first year. So it can be done. And, yeah. And I think the Ravens certainly have a long history of dimebacks they've drafted in round six and later, for example.
And we're in a situation where we may want to use a six coverage DB in some of these situations, you know, not to prejudge Simpson at all, but to pretend that he's going to come in there and cover to the level that Queen did and not have growing pains initially as a boundary side inside linebacker is just, you know, it's assuming a lot.
We don't know. I mean, that's the easiest thing to say about Simpson is we just don't know yet. And I honestly think in the linebacker evaluation I was doing, I think the biggest Ravens need is probably a two down inside linebacker, because you might need to replace Simpson on some of those snaps. You're going to give him every chance, but if it doesn't work out, or if Roquan gets hurt, God forbid, I don't think Simpson's a guy to move over to the mic. I think Simpson's going to be maximized as a trail player, and I think you want to move a different guy into a two-down mic role, and then you probably move Simpson over on third down to that side of the field, which is dangerous in its own right, and then bring in a dime back.
I agree. You know, everybody calls it the liar's luncheon. I felt like there was at least three things that Eric DaCosta said that I was like, that sounds like the absolute truth to me. When he said, talking about inside linebackers, that we feel like there's a lot of good players there. There's a lot of – maybe there's no top whatever. I don't think he said top 15, but there's no top of the food chain guys. But there's guys to draft up and down this draft that are going to be able to play and contribute. I totally agree. I think that the Ravens could be in on an inside linebacker, not to, you know, move off corners at all, but I think it's related. I think it's related if you're looking at some of these corners to draft. When, if you can get a guy to play inside and outside, then you can move Hamilton back or you can move someone else around. And some of those passing situations, hey, I'll say it. I think some of the passing situations against the Chiefs last year, we should have just had another DB in there. You know, what are we doing on that third and five? Why aren't we looking at getting faster on the field? But anyway, I digress.
Well, the knee bone's connected to the shin bone, and all that, that goes all the way through a lot of positions there, obviously. Last comment on Green I'll make. They have gone the other way in terms of one critical factor with Green in some of their recent cornerback picks. For example, JAD. They wanted younger and athletic and gave up on the experience component to their own peril in the case of JAD, in my opinion. Green is kind of a breath of fresh air in the other direction. He's 24 years old, I think, now. Let me get this right now. No, he's 23, I think. I cannot find his birthday, actually.
Yeah, I think he turns 24 this year, I believe. He would turn 24 during his rookie season. Excuse me. Sorry.
Okay. All right. So that's what I'm looking for is what's his birthday this year? He's played 41 career college games, and he says similar metrics to where JAD came out. He's 6'0", 186, 31 and a quarter inch arms. That's fine. 4.49, 40, good jumps. You know, he's got the athletic profile that's similar. It's just he's 2 years older than, or two and change probably, than JAD was at the time he was drafted. What I'm getting at here is that I think you get inherently less second contract value out of a player like that, but I think you also get more first contract value.
Absolutely.
And if I'm drafting a player in the fourth round, I care about their first contract value, not their second.
Absolutely. We would love to draft a fourth round player who turns into a superstar, but that's just not going to happen at all. I think his RAS score was pretty high.
Wouldn't be surprised.
8.4, something like that. But, you know, some of those guys don't test in certain things at the combine. I do like when they come back with the edited or version 1.2 of the RAS, you know, after the pro days sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think you've got a number of guys that are really good athletes. I don't see a number of guys that can play man like he can in this draft. I didn't see that on film, but, hey, I didn't watch every single corner either.
I love the pick, and I like that you have him there. I had him in my honorable mention group, and he's one of the guys I would have as a you know, a spotted player in the fourth round. But I love him at number 113 if the Ravens could get in there specifically.
Absolutely.
He didn't make my top 10, but he's 13th overall on my list of corners.
I like that 113, 130 turnaround if we do stick with him. You know,
that could be corner right there, by the way. It could be corner lineman, could be a lot of things, I guess, but yep. I'd be excited. I'm going to move on to my number 10 guy because we got to kind of pick up the pace a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's Ennis Rakestraw of Missouri. Probably a third round guy, in my opinion, for the Ravens. Again, my list is built for the Ravens. So one thing you're going to see is I left out a particularly effective slot corner on this list who could be included. And I left out pretty much all the slot corners in this draft because I think the Ravens need a bigger outside guy. They're really looking for aircraft carrier size. And they actually, with Hamilton, they get less value even out of a great slot corner if they could get one. So the slot corner everybody likes in this draft, I'm sure, is on your list. So I don't want to give it away. He's a guy who certainly will produce in the NFL. I just think his context with the Ravens is going to be limited if they want to continue to play Hamilton at slot on some early downs.
Yeah. I like Rakestraw. I think he'll, first of all, there's a rumor out that he was injured during combine testing, number one, which would explain, I think it was 4.53. I could be wrong. So it could explain some of it, but who knows, you know, about that. But first of all, Missouri's defense was badass. There's a lot of good players on that defense. And I really like the way he plays football. I don't know how he, you know, how you determine getting your number 10, but I do not subscribe to the theory that Rakestraw is not capable of matching up with high level athlete wide receivers. I thought he acquitted himself well in the three games that I watched.
Reasonably well, I would say. I'll go through my metrics on him here. 7.0 yards per target is not good. but we're going to get into why that might have been a little higher this year for him. Not good for a draftable corner. It's probably pretty average overall. 9.5 snaps per target, 8.6 ADOT, which is, by the way, one of the lowest. You'll find the entire 15th best in terms of being a short ADOT. 96.9 opposition passer rating. Now, here's what I think was happening. He was asked to travel a lot in 2023. You mentioned matching up against some high-level receivers. If you watch the tape of Rakestraw, he's all over the field in terms of he's not in a particular he's in the slot sometimes. He's on the outside, and he switches sides. He's not in the same place every time. His position is really determined by who the opponent and how they're lining up more than anything else.
Absolutely.
Missed tackles have improved year over year for 4 years, down to 8.3% in 2023, 10 stops, 3 missed tackles. So that number that's a good ratio there, but it's not a lot of stops either. Traits wise, I think he's probably a cover three defender when he's most comfortable. So he'll make his living reading the QB, drop back and cut underneath. He definitely likes to have his eyes on the quarterback. Sometimes you see these guys and they don't even, when they're lined up outside, they'll often line up looking back at the quarterback at an angle. Rakestraw does that on occasion. You notice that that's a Marcus Peters kind of thing to do. And I'm not saying Rakestraw is anywhere near his caliber, but it's definitely a guy who looks to be like a cover three corner at the NFL level.
Yeah, I remember when I first started coaching, people were talking about, you know, cover three, are you inside? Most time people were outside shade, are you inside shade, are you outside shade, whatever. And, you know, one of the guys like, hey, you know, I'd like to be outside shade. I can see the quarterback. I can get my run pass read. There's also sometimes where people are talking about reading the quarterback and the corner or nickel or whatever is he's just getting his run pass read from the tackle too. And we don't know that, you know, so I'm one of those people. I try to remind myself sometimes like, hey, I don't know what he's looking at, even though his helmet's looking in there, because he on a particular formation or call, he could be taught, you know, read the left guard here, read the tackle generally, the end man on line scrimmage. So I thought Rakestraw was better in zone than people gave him credit for. Mm-hmm. I really liked him. I also thought he was a pretty good man defender. I think he's a really good player. He falls in line, if you ask me, with one of, I'd say, six or eight guys who I think could go in next year and have a bigger impact than any of us, myself included, would even predict.
A little more on Rakestraw. I agree on the underneath zone defense. In fact, is a place I think he could use his, you know, size. It's a tick off on size, to be honest. Used to be that a 6 corner was really, a little light. And also at 5'11", he's actually a little short now for today's corners because it's like the 53rd percentile is at six feet. So if you're, and that's not where it starts, that's like the middle of the 6 foot range. So you want to be a little bit taller than 5'11" now to play on the outside. It's kind of a 5'11", I would look at as the minimum. 5'10", I'm starting to look at a guy pretty much exclusively.
Yeah, and for that size, his RAS score was low too. I didn't see an updated RAS on him. I thought I had like 6.07. But I didn't see an updated one from the pro day. Again, there was a rumor that he tested while he was hurt, but I really like him. I like him a whole lot better than other people do.
Okay. So he's my number 10 guy. Where did you have him?
Rakestraw. So let me switch my tab. Rakestraw. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7.
Okay.
Six.
Even better. All right. So he's a third round guy there for me, but go ahead and do your number 9 guy.
So I like Sane Ristol a lot as playing, but I don't think he's an NFL outside corner. I have him as one of my guys that I think the Ravens or Lions, you know, he's not going to be there at 93, but you could draft him in the 48 to 65 range and you could justify it. I really like Sane Ristol. He's small. He's tough as nails, super smart. If you listen to him talk about two plays that I remember hearing him talk about maybe a month ago, he was breaking down one of their coverages. Seems like a really prepared guy from a film study standpoint, you know, played at a high level. I know he got beat, I think, one time by Washington up the right sideline. Also really liked his ability to come forward and play near the line of scrimmage. Surprising for as small as he was.
They moved him around a lot. So he played on the outside and slot, but slot is his position in the NFL very clearly at 5'9", 182. does not really have enough speed to carry a, you know, a big slot receiver down the field or a fast receiver down the field. Metrics in 2023, highly barbelled. And that is one of the things that worries about me, but it's not the reason I didn't include him in the top 10. He's the guy I was talking about, by the way. 8.2 yards per target is just not very good. And I have to have a corroborating factor there. And I had 6 interceptions. So you can be a big play guy, and he certainly is that. Very facile in an underneath zone set. And this, I mean, in some ways, he'd be perfect for the Ravens as a slot corner on obvious passing downs, as a guy you want to pass off, as a guy you want coming downhill to guard the sticks on 3rd and 8. I trust him. But I did not like him in terms of anything where the play would have to last for longer and he might get exposed alone. In the NFL, they will find you. In the Big Ten, it doesn't happen quite as often. And yeah. You know, his time at Michigan was very good. I looked at the cut-up of Maryland from him, and I saw some of that. Maryland, by the way, really interesting series of plays there that Maryland had. I got a great feeling for Maryland coaching out of this. But Tagovailoa threw a little wide receiver screen in the middle of the 3rd quarter, and San Risto got caught on blocks on that play. Well, they set up to run the same play, faked it. San Risto triggered downhill and then got beat on a wheel route by number 6. I don't know who that is for Maryland, but really nice combination of puppeteering there, the Michigan defensive back. So that was really nice. He's a guy I really hope that the Ravens won't trade up to get, and they might have to if they want to trade up from 62. And even though he kind of fits what they do, he kind of doesn't, because Hamilton will take snaps away from him. I'd love to have him be the 3rd down slot corner on the field, but just the price in terms of draft capital to get him there will not be rational for the Ravens.
Yeah, the Ravens are in a weird spot for guys in this range because, you know, you're sitting at 62 and then 93. Of course, you know, 93, 113, 130 turnaround, that's really nice. From a Lions perspective, like, first of all, those people love St. Risto, obviously, because he's a Michigan guy, even though he's not from Michigan originally. His family's from Haiti. Their situation is different. They're at 61 and then 73. So they can move on a corner. They've addressed it in the offseason. The Ravens have not. Like I said, things fit better if we had Darby returning. Then you could wait for a certain guy at a certain spot, whoever that player is.
All right, so he's your number 9 guy, right? St. Ristel was? Mm-hmm. St. Ristel is my number 11 guy. I felt really bad leaving him off, but he's the guy. I say if he's available at 93, you take him. If he's not available at 93, you don't worry about it. Don't trade up because it's just too much draft capital otherwise to expend there. And it's a lot of people would have St. Risto going towards the middle or early in the 2nd round. So I don't think there's a chance in hell he lasts to 93. But honestly, that's just judging the Ravens' need for a slot corner. I don't think it matches up for this draft. Guy I do love is my number 9 guy, Kamal Haddon of Tennessee. Now, he missed some games this year. I think he might have played 7-8 games this year, but was among the most productive corners in all of college football in the games he played. And he's got a lot of ball hawking characteristics we're going to get to in just a minute. But 6'1", 196, 4.59 40 at his pro day is not particularly impressive, but he plays faster in an important way that I'm going to get to in a moment. And this 2023 metrics are fantastic. 2.9 yards per target for the year. Nobody in the NFL, by the way, was that good. Jalen Johnson was in 3.9, I believe, was the best. 5.3 snaps per target. They threw at him all the time and didn't get anything to happen. So he's in the 10th percentile of snaps per target at 5.3, and yet unbelievable production.
He's a green. He's a green kind of, yeah.
Kamal Haddon.
Yeah, he's like green from the data wise. Yeah. Data wise.
Kamal Haddon is the best in the draft by a mile. The biggest statistic, 7.0 opposition passer rating. So 3 interceptions. Think about that. I mean, you 0 is the lowest. You know, you have to have a lot of interceptions even to get in that range. Didn't allow a touchdown, so he scored perfect on that. But he's not thought of by most people as a back that as a corner that will be taken in the first 3 rounds. I think he's absolutely worth it. I think the production shows it. Now, he did have an injury. The injury is to his shoulder, not to his leg. So that's a good thing, obviously, coming back at corner. If it were a knee injury, I'd probably have a different feeling. Incredible ball production. 9 of the 33 targets against him were deflected or intercepted. Okay, so that's 0.27 per target. His frame is big enough for press coverage, but he really didn't play too much of that at Tennessee. And there's numbers out there in the PFF guide about this, by the way, in terms of how much press or zone he played. But he's press man zone all out there. But he did not play very much press. His first two seasons, his career yards per target were only 7.7. So that's not very good. And he's had a huge improvement over one season where he played only about 2/3 of the total games. A little bit of a gamble, injury not to his legs. I really like him. I'd love if they could draft him at 113, I would be absolutely thrilled with it. And I think he's worth a higher pick. I think he could be worth pick 62, but I'd take him at 113 because I just don't think any other team thinks he has any more value.
Right. That's the cool thing about the draft, first of all, is that you find each of us has those players that we see a game and then we say, okay, well, let me confirm this with a second game or a third game or the data, like you recounted. And we each have those guys. I think he also illustrates the point that there's a lot of corners who can come in here and play or compete. Let's put it that way. I think that probably all 20 players, there's going to be some overlap tonight, I think, between that we're going to name, come in here and either win or have some clear advantages over JAD and Pepe. Both of those guys I like, excited about them for various reasons. Pepe more so than JAD when I saw the film. But I think the Ravens have to upgrade that, whatever you want to call it, you know, third, fourth, fifth corner, whatever, you know, ranking you want to apply for the guys that we end up with on our roster. We've got to get better than those guys, especially because, like I said, you know, now for the fourth time, forgive me that, you know, Darby's not back. It's tough for me as a Maryland guy, knowing he's from, you know, Oxon Hill, to not see us retain some of those guys. And look, some of my favorite players in the draft are corners from Maryland.
So it definitely is a very tough loss. I really wish they would have tried to keep him. But when I saw what he went for, I thought it's probably not a price tag that they would have done. And honestly, given McDonald's defensive scheme last year, I think that they could replace him with another player and get similar production. I mean, it's not any player, but I think they could find a player who's reasonably cheap that could do what he did last year.
You can find them in this draft. You can find two or three of them in this draft. I think one of the things that Eric DaCosta said at the Liars Luncheon that I didn't like was when he said, I don't think corner is as impressive as wide receiver in this draft. Well, from a top heavy standpoint, he's right. But from a second and third tier collective group, I think the wide receiver and corner positions are very similar. And it's, I have a theory, multiple ones. One of them is that you get alignment, you get this matching of those things, the ebb and flow that football has now, whereby there's so much more 11 personnel, so much more passing. Like you said about the guy from Tennessee, that he was targeted a lot. You get sharpened over time by being asked to play 2, 3, 4, 5 different coverages in a game, and then making certain mistakes, hopefully correcting those mistakes next week, becoming a better player, a better version of yourself, which it sounds like he did.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, agree with the concept in general. And the guy who matches up with that at the NFL level is Brandon Stevens last year, is the most targeted corner in the entire league for the first 2/3 of a season or so. Before the NFL finally figured out that, hey, this guy is pretty good over there, and he got a few less targets. Take us out into your number 8 guy, if you will.
TJ Tampa. Okay. Super athletic. Iowa State, obviously, so the pedigree isn't the same as, you know, some of the other teams that you have. I don't think he's there at 62. As a matter of fact, I don't think there's a chance he's there at 62.
Okay. I mean, other things to say about him. He is on my list as well. I've got lots of comments, but other comments about his play?
I just think he's super athletic, and there's certain guys that he's going to overwhelm from a coverage standpoint, meaning there's certain mistakes that he made against really good players and was able to still make the play or still deny that guy from getting open, particularly on slants. I thought there's certain guys who cover. He reminds me of Hamilton, even though they're different players, from the standpoint that one cut routes did not beat him. It had to be something where there was a change of direction, maybe through film study or formation. Some people call it, you know, guessing. He was wrong. And then that second move out of the route was able to pop open. I just didn't see him get beat on direct. He, from a basketball comparison, he's someone who I didn't think people could beat off the dribble.
That's a good way to put it. He's not my number six guy. I would agree. I think he's probably the best size, length, speed combination in the entire draft. He's 6'1", 189, 32 and an eighth, 4'45", 40. That 4'45", 40, by the way, I got that from NFL Draft Buzz and has an other tag on it. I'm very suspicious of that. I already don't trust pro day numbers, you know, especially for 40 times. They're kind of notoriously inflated. But a 4'45" other, I don't know exactly where they got it, whether it might have been a bowl game or wherever that they might have been testing. So whatever. But he turned 22 in March, so one of the younger corners, not the youngest by any stretch. Metrics in 2023 completely back it up. 4.9 yards per target is terrific, and a 54.8 opposition passer rating was the 24th best in all of college football. Not a great record with missed tackles, 16.9% missed tackle rate, but he doesn't make a lot of tackles because of the modest number of targets. So he maybe have a disproportionate number of run versus pass opportunities. And the run opportunities, as you know, are harder for a cornerback to convert those tackles. You got a bigger body you're usually dealing with than at the wide receiver position.
Of course.
Lots of press experience at Iowa State. So that's something that probably translates well into a lot of defenses. He's a second round pick all the way. You don't think he'll be there at 62. I would tend to agree. I think somebody picks him before then. He's probably my top one of the first couple of cornerbacks going in the second round. Obviously, I have six guys off the board. I think he actually will be the sixth corner off the board because I think the top five all go before him and either in round one or the beginning of round two.
I know the Lions love him. Supposedly, they really like TJ Tampa. And if he's there at 61, he won't be there at 62. If the Lions haven't taken a corner in round one, let's put it that way. That's supposedly one of the things that two guys have told me. So who knows how truthful that is.
All right. Well, they got a guy they love, I'm sure, in round one that they might take. The Toledo dude.
So, yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on. And that was your number eight guy, right? So we're moving on to my number eight guy. It's Kamari Lassiter of Georgia. Let me get down to him for a second here. Make sure I've got my notes together. He's a very impressive athlete in almost every way. And these testing metrics are off the board. His RAS score is probably terrific before they modified it for a recent 40 time he ran, but 6'0", 186, almost 31 inch arms. All that's fine. Lateral movement drills. And a lot of corners don't run these days. They do not run them, but 4.12 on the shuttle and 6.62 on the three cone. Just turned 21 in January. So he's one of the youngest guys in the entire draft, any position. But here's the negative. He just had his pro day recently and ran a 4.65 40, and that is going to hurt his stock. I think he probably would have been a second round pick, but that now he's probably dropping at least into the third. He might even draft further. Battle tested in the SEC, 44 games in three seasons. That's very unusual, as we've seen these Alabama corners come out and not really have a lot of game experience. You know, they get 1 year of as a starter there by the time they get out, and JAD's right in that group. His metrics kind of scream a slot corner with that lateral movement, but I think he has the good size to play on the outside. He played almost exclusively there in 2023. He did some traveling because he split his time very much between LCB and RCB. By the way, if you want to figure out, did a player travel to cover some receiver, take a look at how his splits of LCB and RCB are. If he has splits on the individual game basis, or even usually on a bye game basis, That tells you he's traveling. He's following some good receiver, and it's an indication that you shouldn't expect as much from him in terms of what he did. His metrics are incredible. 3.5 yards per target, probably the second best metrics in the draft after Haddon. And he had a 48.7 opposition passer rating. So terrific. Didn't have great ball production. That falls behind his other outstanding numbers. I think one of the things I really liked And this is why I think he could get by with that speed on the outside, that 465, is that he is a very aggressive hand checker down the sidelines. Now, I want to, as a coach, I want you to kind of give us the how a slower cornerback can make up for that on vertical routes with some good hand checking.
Jabs. You're not trying to land a right hook or a left hook or a straight right or a left hook. You're trying to land a couple of jabs to slowly influence that receiver towards the sideline. If you're, you know, if you're talking about carrying them up the sideline, inside leverage, as opposed to trying to get a larger shot on them and then losing balance or relationship yourself. That would be point number one. Point number two is the guys who are quicker in that first 10 yards, but don't have that maximum speed over a 40 yard distance. The guys who are, have the good 10 yard, you know, time split, I guess you call it, or maybe a good 20. I like Lassiter. I really do. I don't have him in my top 10 just because of the 40 times, but I think that he's going to be a really good pick for someone in that second round. I really like the player. I think he's a much better player than a lot of people are giving him credit because, it was eight different scouts had him in the 4.6 to 4.6 5 range. It could be six different. It was a lot. It was more than five who had him in the range of 4.6, 4.6.3, 4.6.5. So, you know, that's consistent. And that's hand timing too. That's what a lot of people don't understand about some of these pro days is a lot of them are hand timed and it's crazy to me because, you know, I've done that so many times before. Some of them aren't even right next door. Some of them aren't even at the finish line. So it's like, how accurate can that be? You know, so I have a little bit of an issue with that. But when so many other players from Georgia ran 4.5.4 that day, there was a 4.4.9. The same people timed it. So, you know, there is clearly some foot speed issue over a 40-yard distance. I think I was reading earlier today, called him a zone corner. I disagree with that. I think that at Georgia you play very similar to Alabama. You play every damn coverage there is. And you have to be able to execute them. Otherwise, you're probably not getting on the field. And he was on the field every snap, every year, pretty much. I think he did have one injury series for like a two games. That could be 2022, maybe, but I might be wrong. The guy can play. I don't have him in my top 10. I should. I took him off because I like Max Melton and Renardo Green so much. Are those two guys better than Kamari Lassiter? I don't know if I can say they're better. I have him on my list, though.
So would he fit the Ravens and what they do? I mean, if the Ravens get that other safety, in fact, they probably need three safeties at this point because they've got two on the roster and I think they need five. But if they get that safety they need in the draft, who's kind of a split field replacement for Geno Stone, should not be expensive, by the way. Those guys, they're not a dime a dozen, but there's a lot of those guys and a big overhang to the of candidates for jobs at the NFL level.
Man, it's so tough. You look at some of these guys that can play and they can't even get on the field in the NFL. And it's so amazing how many well-trained, smart, tough, athletic safeties and corners there are. I think the coaching's just gotten way better for quarterbacks and receivers in the last 20 years, 25 years. And consequently, the corners, DBs, the coverage element, had to respond. And as a result, there's so many guys, it's really pushed the execution level higher at the NFL, which I think is somewhat related to why you saw a scoring down again, right? In 2023, NFL is trying to, you know, artificially push that back up. I like Lassiter. I think he can play. Does he fit the Ravens? My gut tells me no.
Does he last till 93?
No, I don't. I would put him in the same, vein as Tampa, except, you know, I always say one third. You know, a third of the teams are going to be totally impressed by the film and they'll take him wherever the, you know, 65, 68, 70, whatever, 55. A third of the teams are going to be ambivalent and a third of the teams are going to say that 40 is going to scare us off. So it just depends on what a team needs and then what they take with their first selection, you know, round one, and then where they are with their position. I don't think the Ravens take him at 62, even though I do like him and I think it's a good ranking by you.
I have him. I would not be tremendous. I wouldn't be overwhelmed with the value at 62. I'd be okay with it. that I wouldn't be overwhelmed with value. And there's one player, I don't want to be a needs guy. I say, we have to have this wide receiver, this offensive tackle at 62.
Right.
The guy I love for the Ravens at 62 is Xavier Leggett. As a wide receiver and AJ Brown kind of style, I think it would be a tremendous addition to the offense. He's the guy I would really, if there's a guy at the intersection of need and value streets right there.
Yeah, man, he's fantastic. It's fun to watch too, but he's another one, Ken. I don't know that he'll be there, but I find myself saying that about 30 different players. You know, somebody's got to be there at 62.
That's just it. I mean, and we don't need to worry about it. I mean, if you want to be a best player available, just go ahead and do that. And if you talk about players and needing them at a specific spot, that's being a need guy.
Yeah.
You say, oh, he won't last that, but well, so what? Someone else will then.
It's so much fun to look at some of these players and think. I said this to a Lions fan a couple of weeks ago. I said, hey, you know, Sane Ristol will be there for you guys at 61, maybe even 73, but he won't be there, you know, with your next pick. So if you have an address corner, I think certain teams have to address corner early. I don't think the Ravens are one of them. I really don't. I think there's surplus value in this draft at the late second round to fourth round, maybe even fifth. And when we get to the fourth and fifth, I think we're more so talking about guys who can beat out other players on our roster to make the team. Yeah. And be a backup. I think there's surplus value there. Kamari Lassiter could clearly be one of those guys. Personally, I'm not sure that he's one of our guys, but hey, maybe he is. He certainly played for great coaches who have a high standard for everything you do at Georgia. Some of the Georgia guys haven't had as much of an impact in the NFL yet. That doesn't mean they won't.
Let's go to your number seven guy, and that'll be the last guy we do on this first show. So who's that?
I have Rakestraw.
Okay, you got him already. Terrific.
Yeah,
and we're an hour and 12 in, so it's a good thing. we're calling it. So we'll come back and start the second show with my number seven. But before you do that, Coach, let's talk a little bit about what you produce online, how people can talk football with you, but talk a little bit about your channel and where people can contact you.
I mean, I'm blown away at what I get to do on my YouTube channel and Twitter. I really never foresaw anything like this, being able to produce content that people would tell me they liked. Initially, Ken, I thought, man, these people are lying to me. You know, they're not really enjoying this at all. And then over time, you know, a couple of friends said to me, they said, well, you must be doing a decent job because, you know, so many people are positive commenting. I said, well, maybe the people who hate it just aren't commenting, you know, but Twitter has become fun to do as well, or X as it's known now, to try to produce threads. I really love doing those to try to illustrate what players can and can't do. Those are my two go-tos. I do have a Patreon. I try to put out as much as I can specialty stuff for those people who choose to support me every month. And, you know, I'm really thankful for that. I never get to produce as much as I want to now because my wife and I have a third child on the way here in about a month. So it's already cutting into my time. And I've become, as I told you in a message, I've become one of those 4 a.m. dudes, meaning I get up at 4 to try to get my work done before the rest of the house wakes up.
Okay. All right. Always a pleasure to have you on the show and always a great conversation. Appreciate this. We always run long, but if you don't, you're not catching on to this. We love talking football together, and that's the reason. So when it's you or it's Michael Crawford or it's James Ogden and a lot of other people, I don't want to miss anybody by omitting them here, but you're one of the people I really appreciate talking football with and having on the show. So thanks for joining us. I do want to say, other folks out there, please hit me up if you'd like to be on a film study short, and that includes anything you'd like to do on the draft. I need to hear about it quickly. A post-draft thing, if you want to do that, that's fine. We've got a little more time on that, but it has to be fairly timely after the draft. And then there's a recollection series if you want to talk about your favorite Ravens second tier or third tier player who you just have very fond memories of. And 15-minute discussion, some shorter content to be produced. Just in that case, just hit me with a DM. They're always open, and you'll be able to reserve your player, have some time to think about it, and we can record at any time up until about the beginning or middle of July for that series. You got plenty of time, but get your player reserved is what I would tell you on that. We're going to be looking at the draft together, watching it on draft night. In fact, for all 3 days, that day three will be a lot of fun, I think, with 6 picks on day 3, but don't miss any of the time. It's all very Ravens-centric in terms of how does this pick affect the Baltimore Ravens? So if you get tired of the Ravens not getting talked about for, you know, 29 of every 30 minutes on the regular network shows, then join us and we'll have that organic experience together of watching that draft. It's always a lot of fun. Lots of time for questions, lots of time for us to bounce ideas around. And we'd appreciate having you for that. Coach, thanks again for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's fun. I look forward to the second half of it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.